Good evening, commissioners, and welcome this evening. Since we do not have a chair or a vice chair, I will open the meeting, and I will outline a nomination protocol for you so that we can have a chair for this evening. And that would be that we would accept nominations on the floor, any and all nominations. I'll ask for a motion to close nominations. We'll vote, and then we will repeat the process for vice chair. It is my recommendation this evening that we elect the chair for the period from the start of this evening's meeting until the second meeting in March, and that is our normal election period. So if you're agreeable with that, I will start and call for all nominations for chair.
I nominate Commissioner George for chair.
Commissioner George?
I'll second that nomination.
Okay, seconded. Any other nominations? Okay, we'll close the floor to nominations. And Debbie, can we have a vote?
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And Commissioner Payne?
Yes.
And of course, George?
Yes.
Thank you. And we'll open the floor for nominations for vice chair. All nominations for vice chair.
I'll nominate King, vice chair.
I'll second that.
Seconded. Any other nominations? We'll close the floor to nominations. And Debbie, can we have a vote?
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Payne?
Yes.
And Commissioner King? I said that. Ron, George, sorry.
And thank you. And I hand it over to Chair George for official roll call. Debbie, can you proceed with official roll call?
Commissioner King?
Yes, here.
Commissioner George?
Here.
Here.
Mr. Martin?
Here.
Mr. King?
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll do the flag salute. If we could stand and follow Commissioner Kane, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so we'll move to agenda review, and this is where the commission may revise the order of agenda items. Does the commission have any revisions that they'd like to make at this time?
No.
It says here it's recommended to move staff communications as the first item. Was there a reason for that, staff?
Thank you. That's a vestige of when we were trying to sort out how we were going to do nominations, so please ignore that.
Okay,
thank you.
Perfect. Okay, so we'll open this period of community comments. This is where we invite members of the community to present issues, thoughts, and suggestions on matters not scheduled on this agenda. Do we have any speakers that'd like to come up at this point? No? All right, so we will close the public comment section and move on to written communications. Looks like we received a Planning Commission bylaws. Did everyone receive a copy of that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Is there any other written communications?
None this evening.
All right, so then we'll move on to the consent agenda. And the first item is public hearing for the tentative parcel map case number 14-003, the subdivision of 1.52-acre parcel into a single family, in the single family zone district into two parcels of 0.26 acres each located on 1079 Farrell Avenue. Applicants are Linda and Terrence Fibich. So if we could please have a staff report.
While Matt Downing is getting ready to present the staff report, I'll just note that we do have minutes under consent items. We can go back to that perhaps after the
you want to do it first
item. That's fine.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Chair George, members of the commission. This is an application to subdivide a 0.52-acre parcel in the single-family zoning district into two parcels of 0.26 acres apiece. Just to get us a little oriented, the subject property is located at the end of a 600-foot private drive. It's also accessed between Victoria Street, directly adjacent to Victoria Street. So as I mentioned, the subject property is 0.52 acres in total. The applicant's proposing essentially to split it in half, resulting in 0.26 acres per parcel. Both parcels meet the development code requirements with regard to lot width, lot depth. There is no proposal at this time to develop parcel two, and so therefore there's no identification of building pads or anything like that. However, doing the standard single family setback requirements of 20 feet in the front, 10 in the rear, 5 on one side, and 10 foot on the other, there's ample area on the parcel to accommodate a single family residence. With regard to circulation, again, the parcel, it's at the end of a very long private drive that's 32 feet wide. It's accessed from Farrell Avenue. The driveway and the public utility easement that are all covered under the same 32 feet will be extended to parcel two, and proof of this extension is conditioned as part of the project to be shown to the city prior to finalizing the map. Additionally, the driveway apron at Farrell is also required to be updated and upgraded at the time of a building permit issuance for parcel two. Essentially, this would bring it up to current city standard with a ADA extension in the rear of it. Other improvements, water and sewer service are required for parcel two. Because there's not a building permit application or a development proposal at this time, the applicant may bond for those rather than completing them prior to the final map recording. And the applicant is required to coordinate with the Five Cities Fire Authority regarding the need and location of an additional fire hydrant somewhere along the private drive to provide adequate fire suppression. With regard to the Staff Advisory Committee, they reviewed this project on January 14th. The members of the Staff Advisory Committee were in support of the subdivision with the conditions of approval that are outlined in the Planning Commission resolution. With regard to environmental review, staff determined that the project qualifies for an exemption under CEQA, subject to Section 15315 of the CEQA guidelines, which revolves around minor land divisions. In terms of public notice, staff mailed out and published in the Tribune, posted at City Hall, and on the city's website a notice of public hearing on January 23rd. That was mailed out to all property owners within 300 feet of the site. Tonight's agenda and staff report were posted at City Hall and on the city's website on January 30th. And at this time, staff has received no comments on the project. At this time, it's recommended that the Planning Commission approve tentative parcel map 14-003. And I would be happy to answer any questions the commission has.
Thank you, Matt. Does the commission have any questions? Let's start with Commissioner Mack.
Is that a private street?
It's a private driveway. It's not a private.
Private driveway.
Correct.
So with that, is there an existing driveway maintenance agreement that everyone participates in?
Yes, there is. And that's required to be updated and proof of that update shown to the city.
Okay. And then the other thing is the nearest fire hydrant I saw was kind of down the block. Are they going to extend a water line down this driveway and then patch and repair it?
That's part of the coordination with the Five Cities Fire Authority in terms of how far down they'd like that placed. Obviously, it would behoove all the property owners, depending on where it is. So the fire chief would like some discretion on that location.
I guess my main question is, I think usually you have to provide it within 150 feet of the last lot. So you'd be pulling that fire line quite a distance.
Yes,
down that
you, essentially you would, yes.
So is that going to be mourned by the applicant, or is it going to be spread over all the lots?
Because the applicant's the one proposing the subdivision, it would be borne by the applicant.
Okay. other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner King?
Well, I just followed that along a little bit. Were those other houses, because of that, required to be sprinkled?
The new residents...
They were put in, but I don't remember whether they were sprinkled or not.
I don't recall either.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Martin?
No questions, sir.
No questions either.
Okay. I just had a quick question. So in the resolution, number 21, it says that all buildings must be fully sprinklered. So would that be a requirement when they sell it, whoever decides to build on it?
Yes, so that would be a requirement for parcel 2, unless the building code requires that a certain amount of addition of habitable space, I believe it's 500 square feet or more, requires the house on parcel 1 to also be fire sprinklered. So if they propose that as well, and both would be fire sprinklered.
Okay. And then I'm confused because number 20 says that fire hydrants shall be installed per the fire code. And then number 30 says that the applicant shall consult with the fire department to determine if a fire hydrant is required.
Correct. So, again, the fire department will be working with the applicant to determine the location. And when it's installed, it has to be installed per engineering standards.
The end of the first line, rather than saying if a new fire hydrant is required, but where a new fire hydrant will be required.
If you'd like to provide that clarification, we could do that.
Semantics might be a difference in the sentence.
No, I'm sorry, Mike was not on. At the end, I'll just repeat that quickly. Just at the end of the first line on item 30, the applicant shall consult with the fire department to determine where a new fire hydrant is required. I'm going to say at Farrell. I'm not sure what's going to be at Farrell or on the private drive, but I'm certainly happy to let the fire department, determine that. But perhaps rather than if, but change that word to where.
That would be acceptable, yeah.
So it is required. Just where it's required is the...
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes.
I'm just asking. Oh.
Unless when the fire chief gets out there determines that it's not required.
So then it would be if then. So then we would have to change number 20. So instead of saying fire hydrants shall be installed, it should say fire hydrants shall be installed if required.
At this juncture, the fire chief has recommended that it is required. Keep the language to indicate that, but we are fine if condition of approval is modified to indicate where. That just to provide that. Continuity, that's fine.
Thank you. Any more questions for staff?
What did you say the distance was of that driveway from Farrell?
It's approximately 600 feet or so.
Didn't you mention that it was 150 feet from the resident that you have to have a hydrant?
From the furthest residence, yes.
So that would place a fire hydrant in that driveway, not at Farrell.
Correct.
Does that driveway have a name? Is it a street name or an avenue name?
It's a private drive.
It's just called the private drive off of Farrell?
Correct.
Okay.
No, it's not. It's off of Farrell. It's part of Farrell.
It's a Farrell.
Farrell Avenue.
Yeah, I saw that on the sign. I didn't know if it had a name for
the,
that.
The addresses are Farrell.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay, that's all. Oh, perfect. So then we will hear from the applicant then. Is the applicant here?
Members of the commission, good evening. Staff, good evening. I'd like to introduce my wife, Linda, and myself. I'm Terry Fiebig, Linda Fiebig. We reside at 412 Emerald Bay Drive in Arroyo Grande. This application is for 1079 Farrell. And thank you. I just wanted to introduce ourselves, let you know what our plans were with this project. We have purchased this parcel for our daughter and son-in-law, who are going to be moving back here to the area. The intention is for them to move into the existing home to do a remodel on that house, basically update it, and then they will be starting to build a new residents on the parcel that is known as Parcel 2. Conditions that have been given us, and we understand the conditions so far, and that certainly did involve a fire hydrant. We've already met with the fire chief and with Public Works to talk about the location for that fire hydrant. We also understand that there has to be work done at the approach, the driveway approach, to allow for ADA access across that driveway apron, the driveway cut. We understand that. The one thing that we would like to appeal in the conditions is the cost of the fire hydrant. Currently, as was described a moment ago, we as the applicants are going to be paying for that hydrant and for the installation of that hydrant. And when in fact, we're not really changing anything when you consider fire load. The actual threat to by fire is not going to be any greater with that second structure built on parcel number 2, because that is going to be a fully fire sprinklered property. City certainly stands to gain additional fire protection for the existing homes that exist on that private driveway. Currently, one of those homes is fire sprinklered. When it was another subdivision was done on that private driveway several years ago, that house was required to be fire sprinklered, the new home that was put in there. There was no requirement at that time to provide an extra fire hydrant, and the fire hydrant certainly adds to the protection for the neighborhood. We're asking that we could do this as a partnership with the city, and that the city would pay for part of that installation of that fire hydrant, and we would pay for the remaining part of the installation of that fire hydrant. We ask that to the commission. We ask that to staff, and I'm not exactly sure how that has to escalate up through the organization, but we would like to go on record as stating that. Do you have any other questions of us that we could tell you about our plans?
I was wondering, when you do the remodel on the parcel 1 or 2, whatever it is, I can't see from
parcel there. 1 is the existing parcel.
Are you going to sprinkle that one?
Not unless we go beyond the trigger point, which, as Ms. McClish had stated earlier, there is a percentage that if you exceed a certain percentage of the existing footage or if you exceed a certain square footage, you trigger the requirement for fire sprinklers. One of the disadvantages to us of sprinklering that house is we would, again, have to run an entirely new water line into that house as well. We are going to be running a new water line all the way from Farrell to the new parcel that will have its own separate meter. Today, a separate meter and a water line does run down that private driveway to each one of the individual homes that are located along there, including ours that is existing on parcel 1. So we would have to change that because it is not of an adequate size to provide fire sprinkler protection in that home.
It was my understanding, though, through building department, if you did significant improvements on a house, you had to bring it up to the current standards, which would be
that is correct. System. But we are not going to exceed that point where you would be required to do that.
The key word is significant, and if we stay within the remodel plan, that doesn't include additional square footage, then as Terry mentioned, we wouldn't trigger that requirement. Once we do, yes, we would be doing fire sprinklers.
Any other questions?
No? I have a question for staff on this. On new homes, is there a minimum square footage before a fire sprinkler is required, or at any point in we got a new home being built here that a sprinkler is required?
Yeah, if you're constructing a brand new residence, state the fire code requires it to be fire sprinklered. In this case, parcel 1, it would depend on the amount of improvement. So parcel 2, yes, fire sprinklered. Parcel 1, maybe.
Okay.
Then how many houses are, or how many parcels are on this private road at this point? It looks like there's at least one in front of this. Are there more than one?
At this point, I believe there's five homes that are accessed off the private drive. So the parcel two would be the sixth.
Okay. Okay, and of those other four, this being house five and six, of the other four, how many is one sprinklered or two?
One is sprinkled.
One is sprinkled. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And how many fire hydrants would service the five homes?
They would be the one that's required of
okay,
of the
so
applicant.
There's none currently,
currently
right now?
Currently, no.
Okay.
If the parcel adjacent to this, to whatever, going towards Farrell, when I drove by there, it appears to be approximately the same size as the parcel you're dealing. If they came in and did the same thing and got a parcel split, would that trigger them having to put in that fire hydrant?
Again, if this applicant were not, let's say, were not to move forward with a map and that property owner were to subdivide, yes. So it would be put on whomever essentially subdivided first.
So what are our options for considering a cost split with the applicant?
Excuse me. The requirement is precipitated by the proposal before you and thereby conditioned on the project. So kind of last one in gets to bear the brunt of the improvement, even though it will benefit, it will be a benefit to the neighborhood, if you will. At this time, that's the condition on the project. Staff can explore with the city attorney if there's other options, but it needs to happen and it has to be conditioned on this property.
Is there a possibility they could establish like an assessment district for that hydrant and be reimbursed by any future development?
I would again have to check that with the city attorney on that, but I would say there's a possibility, but I cannot give any guarantee of that.
Madam Chair, if I may just make the comment, if this doesn't, we understand the conditions of development as laid out by city staff at this point. We understand that. We are ready to move forward with those conditions. I merely appeal that to you if there is some way that we can have some cost sharing on that. We understand it, though.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Not a question. I have a comment. I think that this is one of those areas that involves a money change from what our code says, and I don't think that we can do that. I think that if you want to do that, you need to appeal that part to the city council because they can make the money decisions, and I don't think that we're that's part of our job.
I understand.
Okay, thank you.
Thank
so
you
much.
Very much. Thank you for the opportunity to introduce ourselves.
Okay, so we'll open this up to public statement. Looks like we have a few speaker slips, so we'll start with Nancy Wardle.
My name's Nancy Wardell, and I live at 1077 Farrell. My parents have had this property since the late 70s, and we already seen a lot of changes that didn't really suit what I think the people that live on this street really moved there for. You guys are, maybe not you guys because it's been so long ago, but we're kind of getting squished in there and people are just kind of doing, you know, some of the drainage stuff that was done before doesn't work right. when we get a substantial amount of rain as it is now, I get a lot of water into my lot. So there's a lot of little tweaks that need to be considered, and I'm hoping that you guys will include the people who live on that street in your decisions, because we moved there for a reason, and we don't really need a lot of traffic. The garbage trucks have trouble sometimes coming down the road. More, another house is going to add more traffic through there, and I'm hoping that you guys will include us on any of your decisions that you end up coming up with. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Dennis Michnick? Hope I said that right.
Yep, that's correct. You actually got it right.
Awesome.
Yeah, I live on 1073 Farrell. I'm the sprinklered house. And just so you know, my house is like maybe half the distance to where the new house would be built. So I'm thinking that's why they didn't have them do a fire hydrant, but I have no idea. But I was kind of blindsided with this. If I received that in the mail, I didn't see it. I just heard about this last night, and I don't know if you guys plan on making a decision tonight or whatever. If so, I'd like to have it postponed. That's the main thing I'm looking for, to see what happens. I was told by this gentleman that, if anything was done, we would all have to consent to do it. So this is totally new to me, and I kind of have no idea, and I'd like to research it. So that's the main thing I'm concerned about, plus all the other issues that everybody else lives on our street, same thing. Thank you.
Thank you. And Michael Fielder.
Hi, I'm Michael Fielder. I live at 1075 Farrell Avenue, and I have a copy of the common driveway maintenance agreement that was issued in 99 when I bought the house, that I agreed to when I purchased the house. And basically, I made five copies. Basically, what the gist of it is each property owner is responsible for their front section of their house, the front of the common road, Farrell Road. On the last page, the highlighted area, that portion is supposed to be there's four parcels on the property right now that are responsible for the maintenance of the road. And the highlighted area is each person is responsible for 25% of that. So if he splits that, then of course it's going to lower our down to 20%. And then further on, if he builds the other house, it'll be less than that. So what I'm proposing, I would like this common driveway maintenance agreement updated for the lot split, so it's from 4 to 5. And so I would like like the council to ask to put off a decision tonight on the lot split and update the common driveway maintenance agreement, and then do a road condition report after that by a biased party of the road. So, and it would be irresponsible of the city not to look into this common driveway maintenance agreement before the lot is split. And it's kind of fair on the street, since everybody's responsible for their front of their, since it's not a city maintained road. I currently seal my portion from my property line to the end of Farrell right now, regularly. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. May I get a copy of that for the record? Thank you. Thank you.
So those are all the speaker slips that I have. Is there anyone else who'd like to comment? Yes, sir.
Excuse me for being a couple minutes late. I didn't get my name on the list. Good evening, council and staff. My name is Randy Stump, and I actually live on the property, one of the several properties aligned that. I think they have eight neighbors, because I was actually proposing to buy the property at one point. And I'll just tell you my story real quick on that. I've lived there since 1988. My grandmother lived there since it
75. So it's been in the family, that property. I've witnessed countless building going on behind us. Naturally, we're in the city. We expect that. As one of the speakers mentioned, some of the considerations that were agreed to, for instance, single level on Victorian at the back of that development. Now, I don't know what technically a single story is, if lofts count as part of that or not, but they're pretty high. They're higher than a lot higher than my roof. I have a single story small house, but to see a two story house go in behind me is kind of would definitely be unacceptable in my and neighbors that live around me. I know, and what I was told when I was approaching them to buy the property was that the real estate agent representing the family had approached the council at that time, and he didn't remember the name of the council member. He talked to the planning commission member he talked to, but he looked at the map with him and basically said the fire turnaround that you have to build for that parcel would just kill any space you would have to build a house. Because what he told me was a 96-foot. I did a little research, and that's a standard. That doesn't work here. It has to be. It's the end of a street. And I did look at the fire code on that, and they do have some kind of a T that they set up that they have to go. Because it's supposed to fit the largest fire engine, which is 47 feet. That's a big truck. And what I looked at is I don't know that it's 96 feet, but I have a document I can give you with that, but I wanted to look at something else before I give it to you. But I'm not sure that the split would be worth it for them if they had to do that. Because I talked to Terry at one point and told him the information that I'd received in good faith to him. You know, just realize that that might be a problem for you. Because right now, it's real narrow, and they require a turnaround. And it's even in the document that you provided. Under fire lanes, provide a fire apparatus access number 17 to turn around as required by the 2013 fire code, or provide a secondary means of apparatus access. Well, you could probably put a fire hose from my yard, but since I heard the fire hydrants going in, that probably solves that. The other question on that issue I did have was they have a flow chart. How many gallons per minute means how many, you know. So I don't know, but I know from the fire department that one of the ferrule hydrant is 815 feet away from this proposed structure, and the Walnut Street, those are the two closest, is 700 feet. So obviously it needs it, which is great. You've assessed, you've done that. My only question is, does it comply to the flow per minute or whatever, just for protection? And that's great. They're sprinkling it. I didn't know that. That's other good news. But when I was told... And also the family was told this on two occasions because the original owner who passed away, Wayne, was planning on splitting the property but found out that he had to do a fire turnaround and said, how the hell with it? I can't, you know, what's the point? Might as well just leave it the way it is. And when the family, his brother was given the property and died within 4 months of getting the property, and so it passed on again to their family, who I dealt with in trying to maybe acquire it. But when the real estate agent talked to me about it, said it wasn't possible. So I was like, well, that kind of killed my plan. And that's okay. If it is possible, I'm not against developing in the city. We're a city, and we, you know, I conceive a house there. The problem I have is the height of the house. We have a real bad example at the end of our neighbor. Looks straight in the bedroom of the house that was built right across from him. I mean, kitchen window, bedroom window, almost to the floor. Because... we live on a hill. The top of Elm Street runs down both directions, and we're on that grade. Well, we're not quite the same level as the property, so we're a little above them. And I definitely would put in a full fence for their privacy as well as mine, you know, when the structure goes in. Because right now I have a chain link fence, which I already put in the portion where my neighbor is for his privacy as well. But the two-story aspect, it's happened throughout behind us. And it's, you know, it's got to stop. I mean, we've been there since, the property's been there since 74, this house that I live in. And this is going in now in 2015. And, you know, I mean, there should be some consideration, I would hope, for that. But my concern for these guys is I don't know how big a house you can even build if you have that impediment upon that. So I wasn't sure that wasn't addressed tonight about that turnaround, and that was the main problem that I had with even purchasing it. Or it wouldn't have even been, it would have been me standing up here asking for a split maybe a year ago. But and that's okay. I'm no hard feelings. That's how it was. Unfortunately, the house, the owners and the estate members took a reduced price, I'm sure, because it wasn't known to them that it was splittable. So, you know, I'm sure a splittable lot that size in Aurora Grande is going to go for some more money. I mean, it was a good deal, I'm sure. However, those considerations are important to me as a resident, long-term resident. I've lived here since 77 and lived there in that home since 88. And I know my neighbors sure don't want to see a two-story house looking right into their property. And so, you know, I understand the desire for more square footage and in reality, but I think a consideration for the existing members of the community should be taken.
Okay, we'll take that. Thank you.
And that's pretty much all I had.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great, thank you so much.
And I can give you this for...
any other speakers that need to speak?
Good morning, Council. First, welcome to the new Council, or Commission. My name is Aaron Hankel, 196 South Alpine, here in AG. Just one real quick thing. The use of public funds for private development is a misuse of our taxpayer dollars. You can't use public funds for private development. Those are for, it wouldn't be fair to the rest of the taxpayers that don't live around there. I'd be contributing to something that does not impact me at all. And so you can't do it. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Is there any other speakers?
Hi, my name is Colleen Uran, and I live directly behind the property. And as was told, we kind of live on a hill. And already I can look down and see their whole property. And if they are to build something that is higher than a single level, they will be at the same level as our backyard, which we already have with Victorian Court. Those developments, we can look directly into the second stories. So my concern is, I agree that if they were to build something that was taller, it would take away from numerous people's privacy. And just, you know, just personally, I don't think that it would be beneficial for the area. And also the fire safety. I think our fire hydrant, which is directly outside of our house, is closer to their property than the one that's on Farrell. So that's just personal reason. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me, may I get your address?
Who am I talking to?
Me.
648 Victoria Way.
Thank you.
Do we have any other speakers? Okay, then I'll close the public comment and...
I add one more thing I forgot to say.
Yes?
I apologize. I thought of it when you were talking about the fire truck. I apologize if it is correct, but I think the width of that street is kind of conservative or liberal. I don't think it's that wide, but I could be totally wrong. So I just want to make that comment.
Thank you. Okay, we'll close the public comment and... turn to the commissioners for comments.
Well, I recommend that be added that it be restricted to a one-story unit so it doesn't encroach on the privacy of the adjacent property owners. And it appeared when I drove down there that most of the houses are one-story because they're on that private drive because they're older. I only noticed one newer one that was the two-story that I think was sprinkled. But... I can understand their concern for the privacy. You know, they've lived there a long time, so I think a one-story is adequate. The house on the other parcel that they have is one-story, so And I don't know, would that be up for fire access? Would that be a cul-de-sac, or are you just talking about a hammerhead in there?
That would be more like a hammerhead turnaround.
Well, they could design their structure consistent with the fire safety requirements for that hammerhead.
Yes, and only as another alternative concerning the privacy issues, and given the potential site constraints with the turnaround that's required for the property. One alternative for consideration would be to require essentially a design review or viewshed review of the home that might allow some consideration of a split story or a second story component that may be designed to fit into the lot with privacy concerns being considered. That's just an option for you if you are choose to consider it.
The other thing I was concerned about is, you know, he's brought this common driveway maintenance agreement. Maybe before this is approved, that they come back with an amended one that show the proportionary amount of maintenance, because one gentleman said he's doing his all the way out to the street, yet the two new parcels in the, or the, yeah, two new parcels in the back, they're going to be utilizing his area. They're not just utilizing their frontage. So I think it has to be done on a proportionary scale, and worked those out before.
Certainly. It is, as Matt explained, a condition of approval for the project. So as with any condition of approval, the project cannot take place. In this case, the property cannot be subdivided until all the conditions are satisfied. In this case, in this particular condition, it requires an agreement to be amended with all the property owners. So they're all going to have to re-sign this agreement, and we'll have to have proof of that prior to the subdivision, being able to move forward.
Can I ask where that condition is in this list?
It's condition of approval number 29, which reads, prior to the recordation of the final map, the applicant shall provide a driveway maintenance agreement for all properties served by the common driveway, including parcel 2.
Thank you.
Did you have any other comments?
No.
Okay. I'm fine.
Okay. Madam Chair, may I ask a question regarding the driveway agreement?
Yes.
Once again, Terry Fiebig, the applicant. We currently do have on record a common driveway maintenance agreement that was not signed by all of the participants in that driveway today. There was still development done. This was done in 1999. My question to the commission and to the to staff is, I'm not sure if I'm sensing that there is going to be resistance to the establishment of a new driveway agreement, and that I'm going to be held up as a result of that. But what will happen if I do not get agreement from all of the participants? I'm certainly a willing participant in that, and I would be stupid not to be. But certainly, I if this project is held up as a result of someone not agreeing to sign to what I would consider to be an equal fair share of each one of those properties.
Right. I think that might be a question for staff to answer, if they can, or.
The parcel that's currently owned, on the title of the property includes the provision for the maintenance agreement.
Signatory to the original agreement, yes, ma'am.
So with that, an agreement is in place for all the properties, but we would like the provisions to be given the new lot to the allocations to be reallocated, if you will, the percentages. I think that's a pretty simple process. It's already recorded on this property. He's going to already be held to that. The potential is that the other owners won't get to reduce their share of maintenance if they don't participate. So I would foresee that this would be an issue that could be resolvable. Otherwise, we'll be before you with an amended condition question in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have a comment about the common driveway maintenance agreement. You had mentioned that some of the people weren't the ones that were there in 99 or whatever it was when it went into effect, but they bought it and they got a title report and it was listed and they got a copy of it with their title report. So they were aware of what their maintenance agreements. But my question is, can we just do an amended agreement, amended copy to this instead of doing a whole maintenance agreement? That way they're already aware of what's in here, and the amendment would just be to allocate the different expenses, you know, that schedule. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a question I'm asking.
Yes, I believe that's possible.
Yeah.
It would be to the satisfaction of the city attorney.
Just so that everybody does understand, there are people that have that are on this original agreement that did not sign. If you will look at page 3 of 5 of that agreement, there are, it says on the right-hand side by the asterisk, it says parcels 1, 2, 3, 4, which are circled, are signatory. Parcels 5 and 6 are same owner, refused to sign maintenance agreement. So the parcels 5 and 6 apparently were not signatory to this agreement.
Thank you for clarification.
Thank you.
Do they utilize that driveway? Because it looks like 6 is accessing off of Farrell anyway.
6 is accessed off of Farrell. It is addressed and driveway'd right off of Farrell. Parcel 5 is... It does access access through that private driveway.
It doesn't appear to me that 6 would have to be even a part of that agreement.
The only thing that I've been able to determine, Madam Commissioner, is that the property line on 6 does extend across that driveway. Each one of those properties, if you look at that roadway agreement, the property starts on the left-hand side and extends all the way on all of those parcels. It extends all the way across to the right-hand side to that right property perimeter.
If he's not taking access, though, from your common driveway, just because he gave you an easement doesn't dictate him having to pay a portion of your improvements.
I don't have a problem with that, but what I am concerned about is that if we are, just for clarity's sake, understand that parcel 5 on this agreement has never signed that for whatever reason, and that was well before my time.
Thank you. I think we had a gentleman in the audience that wanted to speak.
Again.
We had to agree to this when I purchased the house in 99. On the first page, the Wilson is the lady I purchased the house from. Wardell is her mom, and the other gentleman's neighbor where he bought it from, he's the one that didn't agree to this back in January of 99 when this was recorded. We had to agree to this to get our houses closed through escrow. So we are all in agreement of this, but I'm just asking it to be updated.
Great, thank you.
With the split of the lot. So that's clarification there.
Can I get your name again, please? Thank you.
Commissioner Martin, do you have any comments? So we'll officially close public comments. Okay. Again.
My primary concern is just that, I've got two concerns, but I think they've been both being dealt with, is with this driveway maintenance agreement. If it is included, that it needs to be addressed. If it can be handled with a simple amendment, I think that's the easiest way to do it. But I do think that that does need to be addressed, because there certainly at some point could be the potential, it may not be the plans today, but the potential certainly could be that with this lot split, that one of these two could be sold at some point in time. And we have the opportunity today to address that rather than let it go and then address it when we now have two separate owners rather than a single owner on those two parcels. And the other concern I have is with, you know, access to fire suppression equipment. But I'll certainly defer to the fire department if they determine it needs to be there. From the financial standpoint, I think that Commissioner Keene is correct that that probably exceeds or is beyond our purvey, and that'll going to be back to staff and probably City Council to address that issue.
Commissioner Keene?
Yes. Just for your information, the gentleman that was talking about the fire turnaround and everything, it's one of the conditions in here, 17.
Yeah,
I think that for sure the maintenance agreement needs to be amended. The height of the house is in a zone that allows houses to be 35 foot. And if we determine that that's not consistent with what the neighbors want, we can put a condition here that it goes through view shed and all that, but that's not a done deal that it can't be, because it's in a zone that allows 35 foot houses. So we can try to address that by sending that, if the house comes out to be over a single-story house, send it to Architectural Review Committee for a view shed and design. But right now, the house is entitled to be. The fire thing, I think, is when the applicant goes and goes to the fire authority and goes through all the conditions that are required, I think that all that will be taken care of. And it's almost everything that everybody has talked about, the fire, is actually already conditioned in our staff report or in our resolution. I don't see anything that we need to add to that, because it's already in here, and I think that it'll be taken care of. And the distance for the fire hydrant is in here, and so it'll be taken care of. It's just part of the resolution. As far as the city helping, that's a council decision. That's all I have. Thank you.
Before I start my comments, I had a couple questions for staff. The first question is, what is the standard or the minimum lot width for this zone for residential? Is it 6,000 square feet?
Minimum lot area?
Lot.
7,250.
Okay. Based on my calculation of 0.26 acres, we have 11,325 square feet per lot?
Approximately, yes.
Second question. If there was no lot split, would this applicant be able to put another second dwelling on this property? And if so, how big?
They would, like a secondary dwelling unit, so to speak, mm-hmm. if it were not split. Yes, it would be limited to 850 square feet or 50% of the main residence, whichever's less.
Is there any restriction on height?
No.
With that, I'd like to make a couple comments and try and address some of the comments from the public regarding drainage for Nancy. Anytime we do a new development, there's a a new procedure that we do, which is LID measures put down by the State Water Quality Control Board in recharging the groundwater. A lot of the water ends up going back into the water table, impervious pavers. I think with an engineer designing, I don't think you're going to have any issues regarding flooding from the new lot. I'm not sure why we would entertain a postponement. I haven't heard any good reasons yet. In terms of the driveway and the emergency access, I think we have plenty of room for emergency access. Given the fact that these lots are 11,325 square feet, I think a hammerhead would work continuing down in between the two new dwelling units. That's regarding Randy's concern. I think we can address and modify the condition, which is 29, to update the existing document 1999-022997, the Common Driveway Maintenance Agreement, to be how we determine the Planning Commission. I think we can overcome that. I don't think it's a reason to postpone the meeting. I think we can condition that. I went out to the site as well, and that lot that they're splitting faces south, and it's in a hole. It's a 6-foot berm in the back with a block wall and a wood fence on top. If you limit it to a single-family residence, they really don't have an opportunity for sun. They're predominantly going to be in a hole in shade. I think we could, as Commissioner King, I do agree with him, condition the project to go forward to architectural review and look at privacy issues and overlook issues. Because realistically, when it gets that far, you can even condition the second floor to have no windows facing the residents from the second floor. You can design a project that way. We have no architecture before us, so I really don't want to get in the architecture. It's about the lot split and whether this lot split is viable or not. So I don't think we should be doing any height restrictions. We have a development code. I don't think we should take around away land rights for something that can already be 35 feet today.
One comment. If the minimum parcel size is 7,200, and these are each at, what did you say, 11,000 or 10?
11,325.
Could the, instead of splitting this into two equal pieces, could you move the line over to whatever the minimum side yard setback is, which is probably 10 feet? That would pick up an area there for you to do that hammerhead and not create such an impact on the new lot. And it would give them more room for that hammerhead. Is there a reason why you didn't want to go down in size on that and do them equal?
I can actually address that too. The lot width and lot depth requirements, okay. you would start impacting those.
Okay.
So a couple other comments that I had is I do agree with condition 30. It shouldn't be if a fire hydrant. I think the way the fire code reads is you really need a fire hydrant every 300 feet. So I really hate to go down this avenue of committing the city to any kind of funds or financial burden, not even knowing what the expense is. I mean, we don't know whether we're talking two fire hydrants, three fire hydrants, or I do see a concern with fire hydrants and the neighbors, whether they're located in front of someone's house. Maybe, if anything, it can be located on the other side of the driveway so it's not in front of a house, or if it is located, it's on a property line in between two lots and obviously away from driveways that can get hit by cars or backing out. I don't think this is the forum for discussing dollars and cents for the city. It's for really City Council to determine that policy. And that concludes my comments.
Great. Okay. I'm in agreeance with most of our commission. I think we'll amend number 30 to where as opposed to if. And number 29, instead of saying a new maintenance agreement, we'll just amend that existing one. And as far as the height restriction, I believe that we're here really just to discuss the lot split. And I think once a development is proposed, it's going to have to go through the ARC and most likely come back here. No, not necessarily?
No, not necessarily unless you condition it.
Unless we condition it. Okay. So those are my comments, and so I guess we'll take a vote.
Oh, well, I just have one more comment. Okay, if we can't move that line, then isn't there some way that they can establish an easement for emergency access turnaround on both of those pieces so that it didn't encumber totally on the back lot?
Yes, and that's part of the condition 17. It's just up to the applicant to show where the turnaround is going to be and provide the proper emergency access.
But it's called out in the verbiage in here that it can that easement can cross on both parcels. Is where what I'm talking about.
It's not called out specifically. It just because it's one property owner, essentially, he can kind of do it because he'll own both parcels.
Yeah, you just have to indicate that on his final map that that's
correct
fire access easement. That's all I have.
Okay. So are we ready to move forward with a vote?
Or a motion?
Motion. That'd be good. Anyone want to motion this one? Or?
I'll take a stab at it.
Okay.
I move forward that we approve the minor or the lot split. I don't have that sheet.
Oh, I bet you do.
I don't have that sheet.
Just read the title.
I move forward that we adopt resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande approving tentative parcel map number 14003 located at 1079 Farrell Avenue with the conditions modified number 29 to amend the currently recorded document 1999-022997 to include the new parcel that's being created. Also with the modification to condition 30 to remove the word if and replace it where new fire hydrant and probably plural that hydrants if required. Also, I'd make a motion to also add a condition. Looks like there's 42, 43. I'm not sure where to add it, but maybe staff can say where to add it that this. When the architecture moves forward, that it is also reviewed by the Architectural Review Committee for view shed requirements.
Second.
Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Keen?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
So I guess we should go back to approving the minutes from December 2nd. Sorry, I skipped that earlier.
Just a note for the record, given the changeover in the commission, we only have two commissioners available that were present at the meeting. However, the commission as a whole can, if you've reviewed the minutes, I can attest to them and pass them this evening.
I didn't either. Did anyone else? No? Okay.
I move that we adopt the minutes of the meeting of Tuesday, December the 2nd, as presented.
I'll second that. Okay.
So I'm going to call roll. Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Move on to non-public hearings. The consideration of lot line adjustment number 14-001, location 318 Short Street, applicant Bob Christensen, representative Green Land Surveys. Staff report.
Thank you again, Chair George and members of the Commission. This is a previously approved project. The Planning Commission saw this project last year in 2014. At that time, there was significant discussion regarding a condition of approval number 15, and whether that should be applied to this project. So the project that's been approved essentially moved lot lines around on parcels owned by the former Christensen Chevrolet dealership, now Rio Grande Chevrolet, doing a cleanup of the lot lines to essentially segregate the dealership property, dealership activities to its own lot, and the residential activity to its own lot. At that time, planning staff added condition of approval number 15 that said record an emergency access easement through parcel one, which is the dealership parcel. Through parcel one to allow emergency protection of parcel two from traffic way. At the previous Planning Commission meeting, commissioners asked questions regarding the need for that, given that the applicant's constructing a fire turnaround on site, and also commented that they didn't want to encumber the dealership properties by requiring an emergency access through that parcel one. Planning staff at that time commented that we were the ones that added it in. It wasn't a requirement by the fire chief. At the time of project approval, the Planning Commission decided they would rather leave it in at that time and give the applicant an opportunity to request to remove condition of approval number 15. The applicant has done so. Staff has coordinated with the fire chief. Fire chief does not see a need for number 15 since there is a fire department turnaround on the residential lot access from Short Street, and has stated that if in the future such a need arises, he will work independently with the property owner of the dealership, whomever that may be at that time. So tonight the item is brought back before you simply to request the removal of condition of approval number 15 as I read it previously. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you folks have.
Do we have any questions? Commissioner Mack, do you have a question?
The reason why we're here is because it's too burdensome to obtain that. Was there a letter secured from the adjacent property owner?
No, it's still owned by Mr. Christensen. In his lease agreement with the new operator of the dealership, it says basically with the lease purchase that he will not voluntarily further encumber the property. And the concern is that with an emergency access easement across parcel one, it would limit where vehicle display could be. So he's requesting it. It was a verbal request.
The other question I had is the fire turnaround off of parcel two.
Yes.
Is that going to be red striped or signed? How do we know that that's going to remain a fire turnaround?
Essentially the flag will be red striped. The remainder of the lot will be improved with that particular turning movement in mind. You could add an additional condition that all curbs adjacent to it be red striped.
So I actually kind of walked that today and looked at it. That fire turnaround on the building I'd say it on the south side as we're looking at the exhibit. It cuts through a porch. So is that porch going to be cut off, and or is there going to be a condition to acknowledge that that building has to be modified to get that to fit?
Before he could final the lot line adjustment, he would have to improve the fire turnaround. However, the applicant proposes to do that. That we kind of left it up to him if he wants to cut off part of the porch or make other modifications.
Okay. And I guess, again, question regarding fire access. Any of these buildings fire sprinklered? Is there new sprinklers or, again, a fire hydrant being proposed or anything like that? Or?
There is not. It's far enough away. The furthest building is far enough away to require the turnaround, but there is adequate fire hydrants within a particular distance that the fire department did not require an additional one, and none of the buildings are fire sprinklered. But again, if they were to be modified, expanded outside of the confines of not requiring it, then they would be required to be sprinklered.
So my understanding is when you move a property line, you also don't want to create an unsafe situation where you're putting, or you need to upgrade the buildings when you do put a property line, like right on a building or through a building, you need to modify that building. So do we feel comfortable enough with condition 16 that that's being done, that we're modifying that building to meet current building code? Or
I can actually address that in my conversation with the applicant. He looked at condition 16, determined that there's no way he could comply with building code, so he's going to tear it down.
Okay. That's all my questions.
No question.
No questions.
I don't have any questions.
Well, I don't have any questions either. So we can get a motion.
I'll jump at this one. I move that the commission adopt the resolution removing the requirement for emergency access on the adjacent property for lot line adjustment 14-001 for the location at 318 Short Street.
Second.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Okay, we'll move on to condition of pre-application review 14-008, the interpretation of zoning code regarding the establishment of new motorsports event center. The location is 1488 East Grand Avenue, and the applicant is Tracy Liskey Del Rio.
Chair George, I'd like to introduce to you our intern, Hallie King. This is her first project before the Planning Commission.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Chair George, members of the Commission. Tonight, you will be reviewing pre-application 14-008 that was submitted to staff late December 2014. The pre-application was a request from the applicant to obtain preliminary comments regarding the proposed motorsport event space at 1488 East Grand Avenue. Tonight, the applicant is seeking additional review and interpretation on the proposed project by the Planning Commission before proceeding with the formal entitlement application. The subject property is zoned Gateway Mixed Use and is located on the western portion of the Aurora Town and Country Square, also known as the Smart and Final Shopping Center, on the corner of Grand and Cortland, as outlined by red in the image shown. Surrounding land uses include various commercial developments, residential developments to the north, and city limits to the west. The applicant proposes to use lease space A, the left portion, approximately 2,763 square feet for the proposed project. The applicant proposes to operate a motorsport event space with a lounge atmosphere. Uses would include event meeting space for local motorsport enthusiasts, food and drink stations, additional retail displays, and the display of two exotic cars available for purchase. The proposed location of the cars are indicated by the black circles in the floor plan above. We do have an example suggested to staff in conversation with the applicant and that was provided in order to sort of demonstrate their vision of the project. Club Autosport is located in San Jose, and it is an event venue space hosting corporate and social events, as well as a gathering place for auto enthusiasts. They also showcase and store collectible and exotic cars. The applicant provided this name of the name of this business as a reference for her proposed project vision, and for those who might be unfamiliar with this type of use. The Gateway Mixed Use District, as identified in the Municipal Code, intends to provide for the combination of financial institutions, retail, office, and commercial uses. In addition to consistency with the intent of the Gateway Mixed Use District, it's also important to recognize the land use policies set forth in the general plan. Objectives in the land use element specify that in mixed use districts, businesses should provide for the provision and sale of general merchandise, hardware, building materials, food, and personal services which meet the daily needs of a multi-neighborhood area. In addition, Objective 8-1 aims to accommodate the continuance and development of uses such as retail commercial, eating, drinking establishments, specialty shops, food sales, cultural facilities, and similar uses in mixed-use corridors. Also, the general plan maintains that conditional use permits shall be required for service stations, car washes, and other automobile-oriented uses, and for all commercial uses adjoining residentially classified areas. One of the challenges faced by staff is the broad use categories in our municipal code and the fact that the proposed project does not fit comfortably within one use category according to the code. Since the use categories are relatively broad, the code specifies that similar uses may be considered if it is determined by the Planning Commission to fit within a category or be substantially similar to a use identified. The ambiguity in this case revolves around the use of the proposed project and what use category it may fall under, as it does have more than one use. Some use categories that could be applied in this case include club, lodge, meeting facilities, conference convention facilities, auto sales without installation, and/or general retail. Tonight, the Commission is being requested to consider the question of how to define the use of the proposed motorsports event center, whether it is similar to uses allowed in the Gateway Mixed Use District and is considered a use that carries out the intent of the district and the general plan. Staff suggests that consideration be given to categorize the proposed project with the following uses, with auto sales as the primary uses and the additional uses as secondary. The permit level recommended is a conditional use permit due to the auto-oriented use, as well as the proposed sale of alcoholic beverages. The PED designation indicates that the use is restricted to areas that are not pedestrian-oriented storefronts or that constitute prime real estate. The Planning Commission should consider if the location represents prime real estate space within the shopping center. And while the code does not define prime real estate, generally it may indicate prime anchor tenant space in which the proposed tenant space would not qualify. That concludes the presentation. I will be happy to answer any questions.
And as a brief follow-up, this is an interpretation before the commission. We haven't done an interpretation before the commission in quite some time. It's an opportunity for you to weigh in on, again, whether this is a similar use and as a use that would be allowed at the district. No entitlement is given for the applicant at this time. It's simply an interpretation for that would indicate whether the applicant would be able to proceed with an application to come before you if that's the level of review specified.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for staff? Commissioner Payne?
Just when you had mentioned the alcoholic beverages, will they be selling alcoholic beverages on this facility?
I can defer to the applicant for that, but from my understanding, it was that people might be bringing in alcoholic beverages or they might be having wine tasting events held at this venue. But the applicant could probably answer that.
Hi, I'm Tracy.
Whiskey Del Rio. Well, I wasn't planning on people, you know, bringing their own alcohol. And if alcohol were served or provided, it would be on wine tasting or events or activities and not something that would be on a regular basis. Although I kind of think that it would be a nice addition to have wine tasting on certain events or on a weekend that would allow for people to come in and be in a lounge atmosphere related to motorsports. So, but nobody's, I'm not into having people BYOB, right? That would be provided and that would be potentially, charged for, of course. So.
Thank you. I think we'll have the commission address questions to staff first and then we'll have
okay,
you come and present.
Stand up or what?
Yeah. Thank you. No, that's, thank you. Did you have any other questions?
No, that
staff?
Was it.
Okay.
I have no questions of staff.
Not a staff.
No questions at this time.
Okay, and I don't have any. I had talked to Hallie earlier, so why don't we have the applicant come and stand back up.
Thank you.
I'll just give you a chance to share your thoughts on
okay.
the project.
Well, we own the building, and we own parcel one, which includes, you have a map, but it includes to the west of Smart and Final and to the east from H&R Block to Bill Senna's insurance. It kind of like L's around. And we bought the property in July of 2014, those two pads. And we're contemplating splitting. We have to split that. That was an old daycare. And it's been vacant for several years, and it has to be split. I'm not interested in the whole 4,500 square feet at all. I mean, it needs to be smaller, and we have some actually quality potential tenants for that one space. But I think it would be a nice addition. In order for this to work for me, and you should know, and I was telling Hallie that I have a wholesale car dealer license now and a broker endorsement, so I can sell at a wholesale level. But in order for me to sort of create this motorsport environment, I want to be able to sell a car here or there to make some money. And just having, you know, selling accessories, gift items, I do want to do that too, all motorsports related. But if someone brings in a car that I can consign or broker, I would like to be able to do that. But I need two spaces, and the DMV requires me to go retail. If I want to have a retail location, I have to have two spaces, and I have to provide that proof to the DMV, and they have jurisdiction over car dealers, wholesale and brokers and retailers. Now, I don't want a car lot. I'm not interested in installation services. I'm not interested in any of that kind of stuff. I want nice cars. I want people to be able to consign a car or have a display only, bring in a nice classic car, or have car clubs that come from the San Joaquin Valley. They could come over and have a rally and have a destination ending up there, have soft drinks, snacks, whatever, that we could provide, or burritos or, you know, meals or whatever. And that would be, I think, an asset to Arroyo Grande, especially in that part of town. That it would bring and draw people down there. We do own the property. Have an incentive to make it fly. And then it adds to tourism for Arroyo Grande. And if I can sell cars, I will add to the tax base a lot more than if I sell coffee cups, flags, and T-shirts, which I would like to do anyway. But I think that if I can sell cars, I'm gonna bring in tax dollars too. So I think tourism and tax dollars and then enhancing that shopping center. It needs help. I'm telling you, I'm there every day, and Arroyo and that place needs some help, and so I think that my proposal would enhance it. I would love to have it like a Tesla supercharged station there. I think it would be a great thing to have there. I mean, I have a lot of ideas, but I have to start, and in order for me to be there, I need two spaces for the DMV in that space to make it fly, or I can't make any money. I got to pay triple net expenses myself, right?
<Your own. laughs>
So
So, I mean, that's kind of the critical factor, and I was telling Hallie that, that, and that's a zoning issue. And the DMV, and I, you know, I've peddled this, my wholesale car dealership over here on Traffic Way. Those are far and a few between spaces to get a retail location over there when there's only room for franchises, right? And that's what Traffic Way is, franchise. But it's zoned properly, but you can't get in there. And the property owners won't, you know, I need two spaces, you know. And so, and we own the building. We don't have to do any construction. I mean, we have to do a tenant improvement for a few people, but or me and somebody else. But I think that it would be a nice addition. I mean, ask me some questions.
Do you have questions?
No, I just have a comment. Okay. Being the owner of three classic cars,
yeah,
and knowing that there's only, you know, like two times a year, or other than Saturday morning at Donut Derelict, you don't have anything here to bring people in for classic cars.
Yeah, you know, classic, exotic. I like Autobahn type cars, but I'm open. I mean, everybody loves their Priuses. Everybody loves their Beamers. Everybody loves their classics. I mean, there's a flavor for everybody, and everybody loves cars, and not everybody, but everybody has one. So I think that, you know, it would be an interesting venture, and I think it would bring a lot to the center. So,
Commissioner Martin?
I have some questions. I have a background in commercial real estate management, so this hits pretty close to home. I've got a lot of familiarity with what the Tracy's really trying to do, Ms. Del Rio, excuse me. When you say two spaces, what you're really confirming is that to be licensed by the state and be in compliance with the state license, you need to have two parking spaces out in the parking lot.
No, display.
Display.
Only.
But still, there's two parking spaces that need to be allocated
for displays. No.
Oh, okay, so the display area can be actually inside your retail store location.
It's all
okay.
Inside.
Very good. On the Club Auto Sport location in San Jose that you brought in or provided as an example, how big is that location?
That place is huge. It's a campus. It's the lounge area that's really the example, and it's a much larger than obviously this is a microcosm of what they would be. That's a campus that supports. It has office condos that are. I mean, motorsport roll-ups in the back supports racing. It supports.
So that's really more of a multi-tenant, multi-faceted location. But
yes, and it's large, but these places are around, but that's a big one, and they have caffeine in cars on Saturday mornings where you can go in. It's free. They provide coffee, and you can go, and everybody looks at everybody's cars, and I mean, it's great fun. I went there and participated in it, and I would like to do something similar to that, but you know, it's down the road. I mean, I just want to know if I can do it. And there's, you know, I walk early morning, and there's people that meet behind where the farmer's market is, the classic car guys. They go, they're there. They're hanging out. I mean, why not hang out at La Diva Motorsports, you know, over here by off Cortland? Or the people that meet at Ross, there's a whole group that meet there in the parking lot. I mean, why not have it in Arroyo Grande?
So you're just basically shoehorning a great big idea into a small little space that will fit our community.
Well, I mean, look, if I had a bigger building, I'd go for it, but I don't. And there's not a lot of availability. Even this space, I think, is doable, but I don't have, you know, 10 acres to throw up a motorsport campus. Not that I would or could. It's just that. But I think that there's a real draw, and I think there's a lot of tourism in the county, and there's people that come over here all the time just to take a ride, to be here, see the beach, be here. Okay, come in, hang out, buy a mug, check out some cars, you know. I would like to have, you know, the potential to have small business meetings in there sometimes, or just have that venue where that people can have a meeting or... Or it could be a weekend activity.
So that's where the community room comes in. If there's a local organization that says, I need a meeting room that will hold 25 people for a meeting Tuesday night.
Yep, I'd like to do that.
You're available.
Yes.
Or ideally, or hopefully, whatever might be available to them.
You could book a meeting.
I'm ready. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing, too, I know that you're the property owner of a portion of that center that includes, you know, some of these smaller retailers. But hopefully, or obviously to me anyway, but hopefully there's a real incentive to get the support of the neighboring tenants and businesses, whether you're doing a, you know, a Friday night open house or a wine tasting or a car show or, you know, display or whatever that may be, a mini car rally or something along that line, that these are going to be activities that are going to be benefiting not only your business but the other businesses in there, whether you're generating traffic or just bringing life and energy to that center. So,
yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's the idea. And I would like to utilize, you know, some of my own tenants for some of the coffee, for example. You know, I got a tenant that has a coffee house, so I would like to maybe use her if she's willing, although I haven't, you know, so that's down the road. But those are my ideas that, you know, maybe, you know, hopefully bolster the other people there. So.
And if I can, excuse me, kind of interrupt from the applicant back to staff. Our role here tonight is really try to get some clarification or provide some direction to the applicant, because the proposed use with automobiles or something is kind of outside what is typically seen in this, you know, retail type of location.
Yes, exactly. We would like direction from you to be able to inform the applicant on the level of applications. We're suggesting a CUP, a conditional use permit, and we have a suggestion on how to categorize the use. We would indeed kind of focus on that auto sales, with the rest of the uses being accessory to that. And in that, it's not, you know, it's a different use than kind of what's described in the code. We're looking for direction from you as to whether that is a similar use to what would be allowed and no more objectionable than that would be normally allowed in the Gateway Mixed Use District.
I don't have any other questions, right? Didn't know. Thanks.
Commissioner Keene?
One of my concerns is that two spaces, two selling things, is not going to be adequate for you. I mean, you're going to want to start making a car lot out in the parking lot. And that scares me, because this is not zoned for that. And I just can't see that two consigned cars are going to be enough to draw in a viable business, and especially when we're talking about a place that's really not zoned for selling cars or even having cars inside. One of the things I'd like for you to address when I get done here, the parking lot. I think someplace in here you stated that there was 450 spaces in the lot, but those are shared spaces with all the things, so all the tenants of that thing. So the 450 is kind of not a realistic parking thing, and especially if you try to get a big car show or something in there, you're taking parking spaces away from it. Another thing that I'm a little concerned about is having cars inside that particular building because of the gasoline cars. You know, it's just sounds like it could be a fire hazard for a building like that when it's not a freestanding building or whatever designed for having cars displayed in. I'm assuming you would push them in and push them out so that's because you don't have any major ventilation for cars running in there. And the walls between the two tenant spaces, you know, that you own there probably would have to be fire code beefed up, clear up to the roof, not just to the ceiling, clear up to the roof. So those are just things that I see as being concerning. I'm a car guy, you know, I go to auctions all over. But I just want to make sure that we make a decision that car sales are really allowed in that space. And my concerns, I guess, are as I stated. And probably, you know, and one of the biggest things is if it goes real well, you're not going to be satisfied with two spots. You're going to want to park them outside and have people look at them. So that concerns me.
Okay.
Now you can go.
Okay. we have CC&Rs between the five owners in that park, in that commercial establishment, and there's no way that I can use it as a car lot. And I'm personally not interested in having a car lot. That's not where my heart's at, and that's not what my interest is. And it's a violation of the common use areas anyway. Now, that being said, you can't believe how much traffic Smart and Final brings in, okay? Dollar Tree, Sunbright Cleaners, Nail Depot, Red Dirt. I can tell you that if you add everybody up, I mean, I wouldn't be bringing in as much as what already is there, and there's ample parking in the whole center. So I think that if a car rally came over and there were 10 or 12 cars there for a couple hours, I don't think it would really make a difference in that shopping center. It has ample parking. It has, and that's an asset to that shopping center is the parking. The other thing is that I'm not planning on running cars indoors. I'm not putting people to sleep, right? I mean, I want good ventilation. We just put 5 new air conditioning units in that building, on just that building. I'm not interested in having something be a fire hazard. I'm not interested in something not being safe. And hey, I would be super happy if I could sell 2 to 4 cars a month. Maybe. I mean, I think it would. I mean, I'm not interested in. It's not just selling cars, but it's selling certain kind of cars. And I'm in it to sell the things that I love. I'm not going to sell cars that I don't love, just to do it.
See, my problem is, how do we change our requirements for that area, for that thing, to suit you, but not let somebody else in another area expect the same thing? That's the concerns I have when we start changing the code to accept things that are not specifically in the general plan.
Well, I think a case-by-case basis is part of it. And the other part is that it is retail. And 2 cars or coffee mugs or T-shirts or jewelry or flags, whatever, that I think that it's more of a dynamic concept versus a single use. And I'm not just going in there to, you know, sell cars, although that I think that's my secondary use, but it's an important use for it, actually, because that's where I can make money. And I think that it's a great way that I can add to tax base. You know, I'm gonna have to sell a lot of T-shirts and coffee mugs, but if I sell a couple cars, I'm gonna make a lot more tax money.
I agree.
And tourism too. I mean, I think if people from Fresno or Bakersfield had a place to go and hang out for a little bit, and go, they come to my space. Bring their nice cars, park them in the front. If I get a Tesla charging station, I'll bring in electric cars, and we won't have a fire hazard, right? I mean, I could put a Tesla. That would take that piece away, right? I mean,
don't get on the offensive.
I'm super happy. I mean, I'm just glad to be here to be proposing this. I've been working on it a while.
Yeah.
Ask my mom.
You have there's situation now over at the Ross Shopping Center on Saturday morning where they have the meet and greet and donut derelicts is what it's all called by the people who go there. And they have to be out of there by the time the store's open. So they're pulling in there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they're out, you know, before the store's open at 10. And usually they're gone by 9. If you don't get there at 8 o'clock, you don't see them. Mm-hmm. So I don't see where that would have an encumbrance on the shopping center if they did something like that.
Yeah, you know, the shopping center in the evening settles down too, and then caffeine and cars, or coffee and cars, is a concept that's around in a lot of different cities actually, and they meet early morning just like those guys do.
So, well, and the other thing, Carl's Jr., they have a get-together, you know, certain Fridays of the month in the evening. And
right.
And they'll have 15 or 20 cars show up there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of these places that people have sort of determined to do that. Now, if there was a different place for them to do that, that would be great too, you know. So, but I think there's an interest, and I think that people would like it. I mean, I like it. I drove to San Jose to go to it, you know. So it's fun. So.
So a couple questions I have. Looking at the exhibit, it looks like there's two lease spaces. Are we just talking about the 2763 square feet, or are we looking at the lease space B as well, the 1510?
Well, we'd like to split that because it's a large space. It's 4,500 square feet, and it's a big. We've been trying to rent it since we've owned it, and it's just with that, with 4,500 square feet plus triple net expenses, is a big. It's a big load for somebody to take on.
So you're looking at a different use going in the suite B? And then
in the smaller one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then, so what we're really talking about is just suite A, the 2763.
Right, and this is just a preliminary architectural drawing that I had an architect draw up because I had to bring, and I need something to bring in.
So yeah. The question is sort of like what Commissioner Kane was alluding to, is it only going to be two cars forever until you come back again?
Yeah, you could condition it that's two cars. I mean, you just can't have any more than that. I just need two for the DMV to sell retail.
So the question isn't, you know, if it did go forward, we would walk in there someday and see four cars.
It's crammed inside there?
Right. So if where I'm going with this is, out of the 2763 square feet, each car, let's say, is 10 by 20. That's 200 square feet. There's 400 square feet being allocated to actually show cars. And then the remainder, 2,300 square feet, is other space, whether it's your hats, car, chairs, assembly space, wine tasting area, whatever. What I'm getting at is the cars is really the accessory use. It when I look at use and accessory use, the predominant floor area ends up being the overwhelming use and not the accessory use. I think we have it in reverse if you're only going to have two cars in there. But if it's going to be predominantly cars, then...
No.
Then
it's only two. And that's what I'm just looking, two spaces. That's what I need to get my retail license.
So I just wanted to throw that out there. Question I had is I saw the word auction. Would it be something where, you know, 200 people would come or 150
That's
people
That's not my word, actually.
I saw that on an overhead.
It's not even, I didn't
I saw it on a,
I would not
said for
auctions.
Auction or sale
yeah,
right
that's
there.
Mine. I don't know where that came from.
So that's why I'm clarifying that, because my concern would be if all of a sudden we had a rush of 200-300 cars come. And
absolutely not. Yeah, that's not even in my written proposal.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't see it in the written description
that's
that was provided.
That's not my word.
Because then I would ask questions about parking and
absolutely.
Whether we would park it. Well, I went through the general plan, and I don't see a conflict with the general plan, which starts with LU5 in the general plan. And then I also looked at definition of a commercial mixed-use districts, commercial mixed-use development districts, and site development standards for E, Gateway Mixed-Use District. The primary purpose of the Gateway Mixed-Use District is to provide for the combination of financial institution, retail office, commercial uses, and multifamily residence with retail and other pedestrian-oriented uses on the ground floors of structures fronting East Grand Avenue. With that said, part of the problem we have here is this isn't a new building. This isn't a new project. You know, we don't have a clean slate, and we're building new buildings along East Grand Avenue. We have an existing shopping center that has been given to us, and it's been my experience this exact configuration also exists at the Marigold Shopping Center, and that space is always hard to lease. It's always vacant or turning over. It used to be a kid's play area, and then it was something else, and then it was a thrift store. And anyways, this is a really hard to put anything in because it's totally hidden by Gill's gas station and the new Applebee's, which is soon to be Figueroa Mountain. You can't see it from Grand Avenue. It predominantly fronts Cortland. So my comments are more associated with, well, how does it work with the senior center across the way? That's really the primary concern. Not so much as it fit in with the gateway mixed-use designation, but I see it as being very tourist-attracting. I see it as being a good sales base. I do see it being something that could be more than just showing a couple cars. And I'd like to hear more from, you know, the commissioners of what they think, because I look at all the uses through here, and every use that you propose, it's allowable with a conditional use permit. And I put a check mark next to each one of them. And I also like to make the note that parcel one doesn't front Grand Avenue. It never touches Grand Avenue. It kind of wraps around back Applebee's and stops. So I was going through here. You know, even you can even throw in social service organizations, like if it was a Kiwanis Club or a club activity. But, you know, that would need a CUP. Alcohol beverage sales would need a CUP. Auto vehicle without installation CUP. A farmer's market kind of concept, if you were incorporating something like that, would be a CUP.
There's already a farmer.
If it's a club, it's a MUP, but I would say the most governing thing is that you're going to need a CUP. If it was an educational training thing, it'd be a CUP. All allowable uses, but need a conditional use permit. Commissioner King's absolutely right. The building would need to be upgraded. It would be probably rated from the building standpoint, occupancy standpoint, and as S1 occupant, so you need to look at the two different occupancy classifications between the two, make sure you have the right fire separation. And
what's S1 occupancy?
It's a classification, occupancy classification within the building code, which your architect can help you address, but there's a lot of different fire requirements and occupancy separation requirements. Because even though you might be just driving the cars in there, yeah, it's still going to have fumes and carbon monoxide and then the sound of the engine, too, to the tenant next door or the potential tenant next door, too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't foresee starting the engines indoors unless, you know, moving it.
So my other question that I had is what's your hours of operation or how did you see using the facility? Is it a certain time in the morning? Is it late at night as well? Is it?
It would depend on the use. The hours, some could be by appointment only, depending on the use, actually, and then by event or holding some hours during the week. But I don't see myself holding off, you know, hours from 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday. And I mean, I think it's going to be more use driven and weekday driven. Actually, weekends too. Actually, I haven't quite pinned that exactly down, like the hours that I'm going to be open. So that's a good question.
Because I start thinking, are you going to be bringing music in too, or you know? And again, my issue would be more associated with the senior complex across the way, and that is compatible with them.
Yeah. I think so. You know, I spend a lot of time in that vacant unit now, lately. And I have watched the comings and goings of the seniors across. It does need a crosswalk, by the way. You think that you needed a crosswalk on the other side?
That's true.
That one needs a crosswalk because they trail back and forth with their baskets and things because they go shopping. So I think that there's a lot of folks that would love to come in there and look at cars because they're there anyway, and they go to Red Dirt, have coffee, they go to Dollar Tree, they come back, and they get their groceries at Smart Final. I mean, I see it just as an asset. And, I see all good, actually. So I don't see it as a detriment. And I think that that the senior building is it has a whole interior courtyard and for activities for the seniors to do, and I mean, I don't consider it to be super. I mean, the sound, I guess, if people were revving their engines, maybe, you know, that could be a factor at occasion. You know, people who like cars do that sometimes.
So I guess my question to you also is, it's more open to the public. This isn't a private club.
No, I want to have I want it to be open to the public, not a private thing, but I private parties for sure. I'm not going to say, hey, let's have an event and then, you know, anybody can come in. If it's a private event, there could be private events, yeah. But I would hold, I think that the store hours, if you want to call them that, would be open for the public for sure. I mean, I want to sell stuff too, right? So.
That's all the questions I have.
Another comment, if you don't mind.
Nope, don't mind.
This parcel map that parcel one is also on the other end of that shopping center?
Yes.
So it goes that little trail around and.
Yep. There are two distinct parcel numbers, but it's parcel one for the shopping center.
Okay, so you own that part, that end of the shopping center too?
On the west end. I mean, east end, yes.
On this, some of the papers in the staff report, one here is Mark Proposal, and I assumed it came from you.
I wrote that.
Down at the bottom it says showroom display lounge atmosphere, 2 to 3 rare cars, rare exotic collectibles, and then it says or motorcycles or.
Yep.
So I was. Everything I saw before said 2, and now this statement says 3. And I get that, you know, with 2 cars in there, you could have a couple of motorcycles without any problem. I mean, that's not going to take up a lot of room. But the 2 to 3 cars said.
Well, look, I need 2 for the DMV. But if I can use this as a good example. I belong to a car club. And at the car club meetings, we go to people's homes, okay? And people in this car club, they have, like, big garages. And you go there, and part of the fun of the club meeting is that these people get to show off their vehicles. So if I had a car club and one of my co-members had 2 or 3 cars for display, and we were having a meeting, I would say, yeah, I bring them in. Let's line them up and let's exhibit them as displays. So I only want to have 2 cars for sale to get my DMV. But if I wanted to exhibit 3 cars, I think for the purposes of a meeting or a car club event that were actual people's cars that for actual display, I think it would be great. But you could limit it too. I mean, I'm totally okay with limiting it to 2 cars. But I say on display that people like to show their cars off. They spend a lot of time and money on their cars, and that's what happens at the car club meetings I go to, that people want to display their cars, and their garages are kind of showcases. And so this is kind of the atmosphere that I'd like to sort of create, is sort of a garage showcase sort of atmosphere. And whether that's a bike or a Harley or a Ducati or a Beamer or a Mercedes or a Porsche or a Ferrari or a Tesla or whatever. I'd like to do that. I think it'd be fun. But not necessarily sell them.
That's all the questions I have.
Okay. I appreciate your need to fill that space and fill it with something that you have passion for. I know that location is a very difficult location to fill, to get retail space in there. It is off the main street. Hard, kind of hidden back there, so for it not being prime, it really is not prime. So I appreciate that you want to do something with that space. That being said, I think we are all very clear that it's not a retail space. You want a front for you to put 2 cars so that you can get a license to sell vehicles.
That is partly true.
That to me, I feel, is the main reason. Just listening to all the comments,
being a retail space for the general public, the general plan land use says for the daily needs of the neighborhood. So this is not a daily need. This is a very specific need. You're not going to be open at all times. So really the retail portion, the shirts, the coffee, the drinks, all of that is just to support when you have your aficionados come display and sell cars. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, I can't have one without the other.
Right, right.
So that's
the main purpose. So the main purpose is auto sales.
No, the main purpose is Diva Motorsports and Lounge. The car sales is an opportunity. If I could just display cars without and not make any money, I mean, if I didn't need money to live, then okay, yeah, I can do that. But this is an opportunity that sort of is mutually beneficial for the city and me, plus customers. Plus, you know, I see this as an opportunity actually to, you know, invite the community in for this. And I mean, it's they're not mutually, they're a blend of ideas.
So when you are to show a car that you want to sell, then you'll pull it out of the building and show it, turn it on, open the hood, do everything in the parking lot. Where do you plan on doing your business when you're wanting to sell that car? Because they're going to want to test drive it. They're going to want to listen to the motor.
It's going to be appointment only. And we have lots of space in the back. There's a huge parking lot in the back.
In the back.
Uh-huh. And it's my space, too. It's our parcel. So, and that's not, it's still common area, but it's not public area. It's for deliveries, it's for tenant use, and it's not used by the public. It's used by the homeless people a lot, but it's not used by the public.
Right, right. Okay, so we're just giving you our thoughts, right? So I would say thought one would be a traffic impact report. If we're going to get rallies coming through, I'm not a car person, so I don't know if there's a rally 10 15 20 30 cars when they come in. If you grow and people love the area and they come, you know, more and more every year, it grows bigger and bigger, at some point there's going to be a traffic impact. And with Cortland already being such an issue, my recommendation would be we would need to have some type of review of that use of it, that portion of it. The safety report, I know that Commissioner Keene had mentioned the emissions inside the building. I don't know, do they off gas inside the building? I have no idea, even with the engine off.
I mean, other car dealers, I mean, they have inside displays everywhere.
Right, but they're pretty big and high ceilings and well-ventilated.
Christian Chevrolet only has like two cars in theirs.
Yeah. So that's all. I'm not saying it's not possible. Yeah, I'm just saying it might be good to, because it has never been a facility for cars, to consider some type of a report. I'm giving you advice, because when you come back, we're gonna ask you the same questions. So if you come prepared with these answers, then it'll alleviate some of your coming back at a main thing. So hourly restrictions, I also think should be considered if we are doing rallies and more touristy type events. So I don't know if that would constitute an event and would require a permit for every event that comes through. That's something to be considered. Other than that, I personally think that if you can get this to work and all the safety factors and all the traffic factors can get worked out, I think that it's a great, I think you're going to have a difficult time renting it and having anyone own a retail spot right there and actually do really well, unless it's a destination store. So I think that if this can go through for you, it would be a fantastic opportunity for you to get what you want, fill a space, bring in some revenue for the city. So yeah, those are my comments.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair George, can I ask for a vote for the commission for the benefit of this being considered an allowable use for the GMU district?
So we just need to get a,
Can I make some other comments? I'm assuming this is Ms. Del Rio's kind of her opportunity for her to speak, and we'd be given another opportunity to make some comments before I make a vote. So I do have some other comments.
To the chair,
me too.
so I thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
That was a lot, I know.
Okay.
So we'll let you sit down and take a break. And
okay,
then
you want me to sit. Okay.
Yeah, then the commission will make their comments, and then we'll take a vote.
I'll try not to make you stand up and answer questions, but again, at this point. In general, I like the idea. I like staff suggestions that auto sales without installation services is a primary use. So I think that a conditional use permit certainly is going to be required in this particular case because it is a fairly unique use. I do commercial real estate management professionally. I don't have a dog in this show. I'm not involved with the property. I don't have any investment interest in the property. It's unique to the extent that the owner is also the tenant in this, but I'm hopeful and assuming that there's going to be some kind of a lease agreement or something drawn up. I'm in favor of allowing retailers to create as creative opportunities as they can. This is a new and different type of operation. I keep hearing and seeing retail as a goal. Certainly recognize that I don't think anybody here is interested in seeing a used car lot emerge on that property. I know from conversations with Ms. Del Rio that's exactly what she does not want to have happen in that location. The other thing, and so I'm in favor of allowing that, and I think that this ought to be, I certainly consider this as a retail use rather than an auto sales type of use. I guess part of my concern I have is just, and I would kind of more defer to the owner in a typical more of an owner-tenant or a property, retail shopping center versus use within that shopping center. It's obvious that the tenant in this case will be licensed by the state, but it sounds like the nature of her license is, limits her, certainly requires to have two display areas. If there's some way that we can differentiate between that auto display / sales license she has and or is holding and is in compliance with the state law in that regard, and how we can limit that from at some point becoming a used car lot. I know that's not her plan, but I've got a concern about that emerging potentially, downstream. That's the primary, issue that I have, and maybe that's just limiting the number of vehicles that we allow for display or sale. I'd rather not get into a situation where we're going to limit how many vehicles she's allowed to display inside her store. I think it starts becoming intrusive. And from my experience with retailers, there's a retailer going to have a sale, and 100 people come and park in that parking lot to take advantage of the sale, whether it's T-shirts or classic cars. More power to them. We'd love to see that kind of traffic in. So I'd hate to kind of limit that, an automobile is an expensive thing, so it's a different type of retail type of application. Certainly unique. I like the idea.
Thank you. Commissioner Payne?
I have no problems with it. I think it's a great idea. Good use of that property. It's been through many renditions of tenants there, and they are in and they're out, and then you got somebody else. So if you can get something in there that's permanent, I'm all for it, too.
Commissioner King?
I think that we can make an allowable use, but it needs to be under a CUP so that we can write some verbiage that will satisfy the applicant and the city's concerns.
Well, number one, I really love the idea. I'm really intrigued. I don't know if the vision that has been painted for me can come to fruition. I would not want to limit the amount of vehicles, but I would want to look at, percentage of square footage within the lease space, not that you have to map it and say that the cars need to go here or go there. I love that I can just go to Tappet and see a nice orange Harley Davidson when I walk in there. I'm drinking a beer, and I can, look at this beautiful bike that love to drive down the highway. With that said, I think there needs to be other uses than just sales of classic cars. I think there needs to be other retail components, whether it's car memorabilia, instead of saying go down to Top Dog and get your coffee, offer the coffee there and allow people there sit down, read some magazines in your lounge, or get a soda or a glass of wine or whatever it is and converse. I think there needs to be more retail component with it, not just the cars, because I hate to see the thing closed all the time and only open for invitation only. I hate to walk by and see a closed sign on the, well, call us if you want in kind of thing. I think it needs to be more available to the public. I think it can be governed by CUP, a lot of the issues that we talked about tonight. I think it's exciting. I think it'd be a good use for the space. I think it's an allowable use for the space. I think it just needs to be controlled. And the CUP is the way to do that.
Okay, I agree with the commissioners, and I had already said my comments earlier, so I don't have any further comments. So I know that we're asking for a vote right now. Okay. So for to general mixed use?
That it would be an allowable use in the mixed use district and that you would expect the CUP.
So moved.
So seconded.
So do we need to take a vote?
Commissioner Keene?
Yes.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
And Mack?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time. So then we'll move on to the Notice of Administrative Decisions. Since January 20th, 2015, we had a Coyote Corporation applicant for a placement of the use of a temporary tent while commercial building being fumigated. Did anyone have any concerns or questions about that? No? Okay. Then we'll move on to commission communications. Any commissioners have any communications? Commissioner Keene?
Could you tell us the status of the billboard at Grand Avenue? It's laying on the ground.
The billboard has been destroyed in the storm event a couple months ago. We have not received any application for to rebuild that billboard. Should such an application come before me, I would be working with the city attorney's office to review our ability to even accept and process that application.
Thank you. Just for the new commissioner's information, we have kind of formed a policy. It's not a, to each week have or each meeting have a different commissioner attend an ARC meeting or a Historic Resource Committee, and personally, I think it's worked very well because this way the commission when that project comes before this commission, that commissioner can say, well, I was there, and this was the tone of it, you know, not just read the minutes or whatever. So I think it works real well, and I'd really like to extend that, and then if that's acceptable with the commission, have Debbie send us each calendar dates of when the meetings are and who should attend. And in the past, if there's a conflict, you know, call another commissioner to see if any, and I go to several, so it doesn't, you know, it's just, but I really think it's helpful for the commission to do that. And any comments, welcome.
Well, in response to your concern, I attended Monday to the ARC. I felt the same way. If I was there and saw what was coming down the tubes, it was more beneficial for me to know what the ARC's comments were and kind of the political feeling with the client. So I plan on attending on Mondays when they have ARC.
And I appreciate that, being on the ARC for the short amount of time that I was. I appreciated having a planning commissioner there because I felt like what's put on paper and what was verbalized is sometimes different. And so for you to know what our perspective was coming in, it was helpful. So I'm in agreement. But do you plan on attending all of them? Because then we don't might not all need to.
If I'm here. Okay. I'm planning on attending.
That's all I have. Thank you.
If I'm not going to be here, then I can let somebody else know that maybe, you know, these items are coming up. Maybe somebody needs to be there. But at this point,
personally, I'd like to see it rotated. But that doesn't mean that you can't attend.
Yeah.
I mean, there can be several of us there.
But. Well, they had a room full the other day.
Yeah.
Okay. Staff communications, did we have any new staff communications?
I'll just follow up and we will prepare the rotating memo for both the Architectural Review and Historic Resources Committee. I think we had liaisons for both of those. Follow up, you may have watched the council meeting, last council meeting considered the Bridge Street Bridge project. Two alternatives are going to be reviewed in detail for the environmental document and going forward. One is a rehab alternative and one is a option two, which was a new bridge and including some of the original truss. And upcoming on the council, just for your information, is a item concerning a tool we would like to put in place concerning the drought and potential water restrictions, and that's being formulated for the February 10th council meeting. And nothing would be enacted at that time, but it would be a framework to put in place should we have to consider further water restrictions given the severe drought conditions. And with that, I have no further updates.
Will our commission hear that?
No, it's scheduled directly for council. It's not directly development related. It would be citywide provisions for any potential reductions in supply.
Will that go before the Historical Commission? The Bridge Street project?
The Bridge Street Bridge project includes a stakeholders group. Now that I'm thinking about it, who's our Planning Commission liaison? Randy. Okay. So on the next agenda, I will be requesting a volunteer from this Planning Commission to participate on the Bridge Street Bridge Stakeholders Group. Thank you, Commissioner Mack. We are not likely to have to hold a stakeholders group meeting for a while because we're going to be moving into the environmental study phase, but there will be a time where we'll need to convene that stakeholders group again, and we do, given the change in the commission, we'll need to appoint a new member. So I'll put that on the next agenda.
Great. Then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.